Coming up on Tech News Today, Apple's super fast iPhone processor. Is it really in the works? Who's going to replace Steve Ballmer? We'll make our best guesses. And Facebook gets unphysical. Take that, Olivia Newton-John. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, August 26th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT8. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Jason Howell.
Ayaz Akhtar's still out on vacation. He'll be back tomorrow, but we are here to give you the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. All Things D's Kara Swisher reports Steve Ballmer's departure was not as long planned as Microsoft wants you to believe. Her sources say Ballmer was enthusiastically planning the new devices and services strategy right up until the week he announced his retirement. The decision does seem to have been Ballmer's. Microsoft faces some rough earnings reports ahead, as well as a looming proxy fight from activist Investor Value Act.
Over the weekend, Fox News reporter and friend of TWiT, Clayton Morris, tweeted that the upcoming iPhone 5S may contain an A7 chip, which is very fast. In fact, up to 31% faster than the current A6. Adding to the Apple rumor mill, several Apple-centric blogs, including 9to5Mac, say that the new iPhone will also contain a 64-bit processor. Apple's previous A-series processors and other ARM chips from other suppliers like Qualcomm are 32-bit.
The continuing spate of big tech companies with site outages continues to make me think of new jokes about Prism software updates, but it was no joke for sites that depend on Amazon Web Services this Sunday. Instagram, Netflix, Vine, others were affected by the Amazon outage that started at 4 p.m. Eastern time yesterday and continued for several hours. Amazon reported the outage was due to a partial failure of a network device. The Prism box, maybe? I don't know. They can't say legally.
Yesterday, parts of China's internet service were taken offline due to a large-scale denial service attack, according to the China Internet Network Information Center. The attacks began early on Sunday and continued for several hours, culminating in the biggest ever denial of service China has ever seen. The attacks targeted the internet registry that allows users to access sites hosted on domains ending in .cn, although by today, the issues appear resolved.
German weekly Der Spiegel got in on some Snowden leak action this weekend, reporting that the NSA tapped data traffic that gave them access to the United Nations internal video conferencing system. They even added a yay in one leaked document. Targets included the International Atomic Energy Agency and an EU delegation. Der Spiegel also reported on a special collection service the NSA uses to spy on 80 embassies and consulates around the world. Best part? These are all likely legal under U.S. law. Patriot Act.
Yay.
Hey. NTT Docomo shares rose in Japan after the chief financial officer for the company, Kazuto Tsubushi, told media outlet Sankai Biz, easy for me to say, that there are compelling reasons for his company and Apple to reach an agreement to carry the iPhone. Docomo shares rose 2.1% to 159,600 yen at the close in Tokyo, which is the highest level for the company since May 22nd.
Facebook's Instagram used some allowance money from Daddy Zuckerberg to buy its first company. Y Combinator's Luma, a video capture stabilization and sharing app, will shut down soon. and its stabilization tech has apparently already been added to Instagram. Luma's iOS app will no longer be supported after December 31st.
According to a picture that surfaced not only on GeoGaff's forums, but also Reddit, if you work full-time at Microsoft's Interactive Entertainment Business Division, you may not only get a free Xbox One on launch day, but it might be one in a white and silver gray hue that won't be available to the public. But that's not all. You may also get 1 year of Xbox Live and all first-party games for free. Of course, the picture could be photoshopped and this could all be false, like most other things in life.
Well, but you can still buy things on Facebook, although Facebook's foray into selling physical objects is over. Facebook found that 20% of its Facebook gift sales were for things, while its biggest sellers were gift cards. So over the next 2 weeks, visitors to Facebook gifts will start to see only gift card options. No more stuffed animals or chocolates, sorry. The gift section will also get a redesign to its landing page and an update to the recommendations engine.
Google isn't just working on software to help major automakers build self-driving cars. No, it's also building its own full-fledged self-driving car. At least that's what former Wall Street Journal reporter Jessica Lessen's sources tell her. The company has apparently considered ways to sell self-driving vehicles to individuals like you and me, but it's also focused on the potential for one of its self-driving cars to become part of a robo-taxi fleet that pick up passengers on demand.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace. You know how much we love Squarespace here. The all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional gallery, website, online portfolio. And now we'd like to check out some of the sites you've built with Squarespace. Send a tweet with a link to your Squarespace website to hashtag TNT Squarespace, and we'll take a look. We could choose your Squarespace site to mention on a future episode. We've been looking at some great ones. People are doing all kinds of cool things, cool galleries, constantly taking advantage of the improved platform, the beautiful designs. Here's just another beer blog, justanotherbeerblog.com. A template was customized with an interesting banner and background color. Even looks great on mobile devices. Site reconfigures the design so it looks right on the device that you're using to look at it with. You can check out the glorious beer gallery in the Quench Your Visual Thirst section. And they have a slider that makes it easy to browse images. They have auto-published from Instagram. Makes it super simple for them to update the visuals. They're always giving you great stuff. And it's a really interesting site. A great way to take advantage of Squarespace. Plus, they get beautiful code. They get hosting included. They get search engine optimization. You want to try this stuff out for yourself. Go start a trial. You don't even need to give them a credit card or anything. Just start building your website. And then when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT8 to get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. Don't forget to send a tweet with hashtag TNT Squarespace. We could be choosing your Squarespace site to mention on a future episode. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. We thank them for their support. Joining us now, Randall Bennett from vidpresso.com, longtime friend of the show. We go way back to the CNET. It's good to have you back on the show, Randall.
Yeah, man, good to be back. So excited to be here.
We got Steph Ballmer leaving over Friday. People haven't stopped talking about that. The Facebook gift thing. Got an interesting Marissa Meyer bio out there. Let's start by talking about that faster A7 chip, Sarah.
Yeah, so obviously we're marching towards the September 10th announcement that Apple hasn't quite announced yet, but we're all excited for. Clayton Morris, as I mentioned in the news view, says he's got some sources, doesn't say who, that tell him that the A7 processor, which he says is apparently rumored to be in the iPhone 5S, if indeed that's what it's called, is going to be a lot faster than what we're currently used to with the A6 chip, which is in the iPhone 5, up to 31% faster. Supposedly still a dual-core processor, but 64-bit. Now, 9to5 Mac also sort of corroborates that and says this could be better for animations. iOS 7 notoriously is heavier on the animations, just kind of in the back end operating system and the transparencies that are part of if you pull up the new control panel, that sort of thing, other graphics. But, you know, other people are saying, well, that's not really what you would need a 64-bit processor for. It probably has a lot more to do with battery life, that sort of thing. Morris has also pointed to a dedicated chip for motion tracking, which would point to a camera upgrade, which we've heard a little bit about in the past. Previous rumors included that slow motion mode that could possibly capture video at 120 frames per second, which could be cool, although not necessarily the first smartphone to do it. The iPhone camera has always kind of stood out as a leader. Randall, what do you make of all this? Do you think we're going to get a 64-bit processor? Do you think that it's a little too soon for stuff like this? Does anything stick for you?
Timing. It seems like it doesn't seem out of the question by any stretch of the imagination. You know, the rumors that have been talking about graphics support, I'm assuming that those are mostly unfounded. You know, the iPhone is doing all this crazy transparency and blurring and all this stuff. That's mainly happening on the GPU, and so a lot of the processing that you do wouldn't be like CPU intensive. So you know this could be true. It's hard for me to say really. Like I don't have the Clayton Morris inside source, but regardless, like I think it would be we're going to see a 5S and with an upgraded CPU, you know, a faster phone. That seems par for the course for Apple.
Yeah, it'd be surprising if we didn't see a faster processor in some way. And from what it looks like, they definitely have been testing a 64-bit processor. It seems like it's at least even, if not a decent bet, that you might see it in this phone. But by all of the stuff that I'm reading, it looks like we'll definitely see a 64-bit processor in a phone within a year if we don't see it in the next announcement.
Yeah, and it seems to me, you know, a lot of people say, well, this is obviously because, you know, gaming is so big. And it seems like for Apple, if I look at the last few product cycles, Apple doesn't care that much about speed as much as it does about stability. So I think, yeah, if this is something that we see in the next phone, it probably has to do with a better camera, an operating system that seems fluid, and better battery life. I'm certainly one that's championing that effort.
Well, Apple champions battery life too. That's one of the things they love to tout. And one of the reasons we've heard given, not officially, but in back channels, for why they haven't added particular features, most famously when they didn't have 3G in the launch of the original iPhone. They said, it's battery life.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, I mean, and that's my point, is that I think that's what matters to Apple, because I think that that's what Apple can say to the public. You know what we have? We've got a phone that you don't have to worry about all day. And that actually matters more than some other specs that people equate with a better processor.
Let's start playing the bomber go round then. It's that time. Let's take a look at Kara Swisher. She had that article that was actually really interesting about what led up to Ballmer's departure. Now, we talked to Mary Jo Foley in a special on Friday, and she said that Ballmer seemed to take responsibility. He said, I made the decision. Bill Gates backed me. If you read Kara's story, that makes sense. It sounds like Ballmer didn't want to go, and he was very enthusiastic to lead the company. He even said in his email, originally I planned to be here until the middle of the transition. But what happened, I think, is they started to realize, maybe in conversations with the board, that he was going to have to fight a proxy fight. And he was going to be a lightning rod for attention. And the earnings reports were not going to be good for a couple of quarters. And if they were going to make a transition, they needed to make it now. So even if today's Steve made the choice, said a source to All Things D, it was a choice yesterday's Steve did not want to. All right, knowing that he's gone, knowing that maybe this took Microsoft, not a little by surprise, but they started to do it faster than maybe they wanted. The top candidates being touted around for internal replacements are Tony Bates and Satya Nadella. And then after that, you hear a lot of different names internally passed around. Trip Chowdhury, an analyst at Global Equities Research, and touted to, I think it was Bloomberg, Google Senior Vice President Vic Gundotra, pointing out he used to run Microsoft's software evangelism program, and he is a rising star at Google. John Donahoe from eBay has been touted by a few people. Randall, what do you think? Will Microsoft stay with its Ballmer-originated strategy and probably go with someone inside? Or will they take this as an opportunity to change strategies again, maybe bring somebody from outside?
I feel like they kind of screwed up. Like all the really good candidates who I think are, you know, top shelf people who I would recommend were people like Jay Allard or Steven Sinofsky, or like people, all of the kind of people who were born and bred in Microsoft culture, but showed the most promise of, you know, thinking differently. Those are the people who I think that still should be on their radar if Microsoft would have them. Jay Allard especially, he was the guy who sort of sexed up the Xbox and made it a lot different product. He's also responsible for the launch of the original Zune HD, which is where Metro comes from. So not having that sort of talent in-house, I kind of feel like they're going to have to go out of house, because right now Microsoft is more or less adrift in the consumer space, and that's the place where they want to be. They don't, you know, they Ballmer said in that Mary Jo Foley interview that, you know, they find that the device and the services and everything have to all be together, and consumers aren't just going to use devices at work anymore and devices at home. It's all going to be one. So if Microsoft really wants to play in that world where Apple kind of has blazed the trail, I think they need a little bit more original thinking than has been shown inside Microsoft. I mean, if you looked at the Xbox One as a prime example, with all the backlash that's received, it seems to me that people at Microsoft have a specific way of thinking, and it's the Microsoft way, and it's been that way for 30 years because of Gates and Ballmer. And maybe having an outsider come in and try to change things might help them a little. But it also, I mean, you know, with the culture that's that entrenched, it could also hasten their demise, a la Yahoo and pre-Marissa Mayer. You know, you have these different people with their different takes that are, you know, trying to push towards one direction that might not be the right direction. I think the best choice is still outside of Microsoft, but it's going to be a sketchy time no matter what.
Devices and services has been the mantra now for about a year since Ballmer first threw it out there. And I still don't know exactly what they mean, especially about the devices side, because sometimes they're like, well, devices means Windows software. Windows, to me, is almost more on the services side, but they're trying to play it fast and loose with their partners and say, no, we're not talking about us making devices, although maybe we are. We're also talking about the other devices. So somebody needs to bring some focus and some definition to this, whether they stay with this strategy or whether they come up with something new. Because that's what the problem is right now, is everyone knows what Microsoft is good at, and what they're good at doesn't have the longer-term future. And nobody knows what Microsoft's longer-term future might be other than Xbox. Xbox seems pretty strong. Game consoles, you know, maybe they have a sunset in their future, but they're not going away anytime soon. But selling laptops and desktops is at best a stable to declining market. And you want to be in a growth market if you're a company like Microsoft.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we can all say everyone knows what Microsoft's good at, but it's all a declining market. So now what happens? Is there nobody within the company that seems like they would just be the easiest possible choice to say, you're next in command? Absolutely. Ballmer had a good run. It seems like no.
I would divide the company into enterprise and consumer, and throw Xbox at the consumer side of it and throw Windows at the enterprise side of it. And that's why I'm not CEO of Microsoft, because that's probably a horrible idea. I don't know. Let's talk about Facebook changing up. They're not afraid to change their gifts section. I won't be able to buy you chocolate on Facebooks anymore, Sarah.
Oh, thank goodness. You know, this was always a weird initiative from the get-go. September of last year, so over almost a year ago, Facebook launched gifts, physical gifts. You now see it when you wish somebody happy birthday. Facebook says, would you like to buy them a Starbucks coffee or chocolates? Or somebody gave me a candle last year, which was sort of stinky, but it was a very nice gesture. But, the whole thing was physical gifts for your friends based on what you think that they would like. The problem is that Facebook says, well, you know, it took in $5 million in earnings between gifts and user-promoted posts in the fourth quarter of 2012, but that was the first quarter that it was offered. And from there on, it didn't really seem to make an uptick. People just, for the most part, had a hard time saying, friend of mine, this is the physical gift that I choose to give you. Facebook since then has launched the Facebook gift card, which would allow me to give you, Tom, just some basic money so that you could go and buy what you wanted. But apparently only 20% of total gift card sales made between two Facebook users were for physical products. Gift credits to Starbucks, iTunes was another one, were big sellers because I didn't actually have to get you anything. You know, I'm just saying, hey, here's some money. Go get yourself what you want. It's a gift card thing. And that was doing better for Facebook. So the company decided, well, why are we partnering with these companies to sell the stuff that nobody really wants? What they will now be doing is factoring people's check-ins and people's likes to offer goods. So, for example, Tom, if you like a certain coffee company, right, and you've said that you've liked it on Facebook and you've checked into a couple coffee places, I will then have the opportunity to gift something that is more closely related to a page that you've liked relating to a specific product, which makes a lot more
sense. So, like, give me a gift card for that place is what that sounds
exactly,
like.
Because you've basically explicitly stated, this is what I want. So I can give you a currency, basically, you know, an amount for what you've already said that you want and what you've already proven that you really do like because you've been there. They don't include photo check-in. So anybody who's like, Instagram locations, I don't want that to be part of Facebook gifts. That's actually going to be stripped out. But actual Facebook check-ins that are used during the service. I have to say, the Facebook gifts, for the most part, I looked through a few of them every once in a while to try to give somebody something for their birthday or another occasion. They always seemed kind of kitschy and limiting. I wonder why Facebook didn't just do this already. Randall, did you ever use Facebook gifts?
I've used it a couple times. And the thing that I always gift, it's like my go-to gift, is the RDO gift card. I love RDO. Like, I'm a huge RDO fan. And, you know, it's really cool when my friends can use it for a couple months for like $20 or whatever. So it, to me, it makes sense that they're getting rid of the physical gifts. Kind of, you know, it's like, even though that 25% there's a lot smaller amount of people using physical gifts than virtual gifts or gift cards. Is it worth really like throwing that out though? Because how cool is it when, you know, someone who I care about, who I haven't, you know, I'm friends with however many people on Facebook, I haven't thought about them in a long time, I could send them flowers or, you know, coffee or like, you know, just a pack of something that they would care about. It seems kind of cool. And even though it's not used a lot, it just kind of seems like a fun feature. I think this might be Facebook's DNA, though, to pick the best result and just optimize for it and have that be like the thing that people use, right? So rather than have a lot of options, just pick the one that converts best and go with that. So I think that might be a little bit of a detriment to the user experience. But at the same time, like, I still have never bought anything physical. I typically would buy services that I know people would love. So I can't really complain. But maybe, you know, there's this like part of me that says, that's really cool. Like, are you sure you want to throw it away?
I think it's a little bit of psychology at work here, too. When you're buying for somebody in the Facebook world, it seems like you're buying more spur of the moment. It's not where you go to buy a really thoughtful gift, right? Yeah. It's more of like, oh, I just want to do something fun for somebody. And when you're in that mindset, I think you're less likely to want to send something, some kind of object, because you're afraid they won't like it. So you get them a gift card, that's safe. That's always the safer bet. That's become like the de rigueur for that second tier on your list is like, oh, I'll get them a gift card. Because then they can get whatever they want.
Completing the loop though, right? So my wife is here, she bought me a lot of cool stuff. And the way she bought me stuff that I wanted without telling her was by using Pinterest. So I'm not a huge pinner. But when I see something I like, something kind of quirky or interesting, I'll pin it. Like these headphones from Sony, they were on the wire cutter, 6 months ago. And I was like, oh, those are $80. That seems like a really cool thing, something I would love. And, you know, when my wife got that for me, it was this huge surprise. And it's like, oh, thanks so much. If they could complete that loop and maybe, you know, Facebook's not really a place where you save things you like. So the physical part doesn't really match it as well. But at the same token, like if you could get someone a thoughtful gift without spending a ton of time and you know that they would love it, that's a pretty good experience. I think it's a fun experience that feels like we live in the future. You know what I'm saying? So.
All right. Yeah, maybe Facebook should buy Pinterest.
Hey.
Might be looking at it. Who knows? Let's take a quick break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show, ProXPN. There are plenty of ways people can get at your data, whether they're governments or hackers or crackers or nefarious individuals. You want to keep them out, even if they're just pranksters. You want to keep them out. One of the ways that you shouldn't make it easy for them is to use an open Wi-Fi connection. Try ProXPN. ProXPN is a global virtual private network, works with almost any internet connection, creates a secure encrypted tunnel through which all of your online data passes back and forth. Any online application can work with ProXPN, including your web browser, your email, your file sharing, your instant messaging programs. ProXPN keeps everything you do online hidden from the prying eyes, disguises your physical location, gives you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter where you live or travel to. I had a guy on Twitter today said, I was running into this weird block. I used ProXPN. not a problem, frustration over. And you got complete online privacy through a 512-bit encryption tunnel. If you know what this is, OpenVPN or PPTP, you choose. You can use it on Linux. You can use it on your phone. There's a new ProXPN app for Android in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN. World-class customer support, and Steve Gibson gave it a great review on Security Now. So go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. We've got a special offer. Use the code TNT to receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. The lifetime. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit. Sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. Onward into the truth about Marissa Meyer. Nicholas Carlson wrote an excellent piece on Marissa Meyer. He put it up on Business Insider. It might take you about an hour to read. That's about how long it took me. It's, I think, 20,000 words. It tells her story from youth through getting the job at Google after college, through leaving Google and starting at Yahoo. Has some great sources, even has a bibliography in there. It's really well done. And it tells about a Marissa Meyer who's painfully shy, it says, quoting people. She's driven, though, and she's most comfortable when she's teaching. Incredibly focused on the user, sometimes seen as robotic or snotty, probably because of her shyness. Very fast talking. They talk about her in college when they would work on these projects in study groups, being very down to business, not worried about socializing, just getting people back on track. And in fact, she wanted to be a doctor, but she's quoted as saying, "I was just doing too many flashcards. They were easy for me, but it was just a lot of memorization." So she ended up in symbolic systems, and that's how she ended up in technology. She almost deleted. There's a great story about how she almost deleted the offer from Google. She had already decided she had all the offers she needed. She missed and hit the space bar instead of delete, ended up opening the email, reading it, and saying, "Huh, maybe I'll take a flyer on this new Google thing." So I don't know if you guys got a chance to really read this thing, but given that sort of thumbnail sketch, if that's the kind of person Marissa Meyer is, what do you think we can expect at Yahoo based on some of the nuggets we glean from this article, Randall?
The thing that stuck out to me was just authenticity. A lot of the problems I have with tech executives, especially people like Ross Levinson, who they mentioned earlier in the article, is they kind of come from this like cult of personality where, you know, you get an MBA, you know the right people, you go to Harvard, and you're CEO of a company. And I think the cool thing about Marissa is that she has this great background that's really rich. She doesn't come from a really well-off family. She comes from a family that's pretty normal. Like, I think a lot of people in middle America can identify with that. She has, you know, she's a shy person who kind of deals with that in her own way. If you hear her talk in person, sometimes it is kind of awkward, like just to be totally blunt, but that's not why she's great at product. The best part for Yahoo really is that she does seem like the type of person who's well-rounded, who understands product is the most important part of a company, and who can, the small changes that she's made at Yahoo already point to this brighter future. I didn't have a chance to read the entire article because Nicholas, who's one of my friends, like, put that in a Kindle book, man. I'm not going to read 20,000 words in a page. But the beginning parts that I read, especially with her like home life, it's been a lot less reported. She just seems like she's really well-grounded. And no offense to Yahoo, but they haven't had a lot of like well-grounded thinking in the executive levels. They had media types. They wanted to be this media company with, you know, friends in Hollywood and whatever. And her focus, her meticulous focus on the product is what's going to save Yahoo from an untimely demise, I think.
When I read, and I agree, Tom, it was a really fascinating look into somebody who's not just sort of has had a fascinating career thus far, but seems to be doing a lot of interesting things with Yahoo, which a lot of people wrote off a long time ago. But when I hear the sort of details of the kind of person that Marissa Meyer is or might be or how she's interacted with people, I'm sort of like, yep, that sounds a lot like people I know in tech. I mean, it doesn't sound all that far-fetched. Somebody who's a little bit shy, incredibly focused on the user, maybe at the detriment of in-person relations, good at teaching because she's very, very bright. You know, if you've got something to focus on and you can tell me about it, you're good at that. But socialization probably isn't first priority. That does not sound very unusual to me. That sounds like the mark of not just a leader, but a particular kind of leader that works well in technology.
Yeah, if you guys haven't had a chance to read it out there, definitely take a look in the show notes, or you can find it at businessinsider.com. We'll have it up in the link at twit.tv/TNT. Let's talk a little bit about Instagram getting some, as I jokingly called it, some allowance money from Zuckerberg. They bought a company.
Yeah, they did. It's called Luma. You may know it. Formerly, it was called Midnox, which was, I don't know why it was ever called Midnox, but Luma made a lot more sense. You know, it's funny. I first heard of Luma because a friend of mine does these, he mounts his iPhone on a little drone and he takes these really cool videos of these drone videos. He was showing me a video and I said, gosh, that looks so good. I mean, is it like a jib cam or something? He said, no, I'm using this app called Luma. So I'd actually heard about it a few months ago. Apparently, the iOS app has since been pulled from the App Store because Instagram has acquired it, not just the technology, but also the team. However, existing users will be supported with the app until the end of this year, until December 31st, 2013. But what's neat about Luma is that not only is it image stabilization, which just really helps kind of jerky video and making things look nice and smooth, but it also has what's called non-disruptive video filtering. So you can shoot a video with a filter turned on, but then afterwards, you can say, yeah, I changed my mind. I can go ahead and strip that out and have the original video be able to post after it's been recorded. You can't do that with a lot of apps. So that's pretty cool. And, you know, it's funny. Apparently, sources tell TechCrunch anyway, that this may actually already be incorporated into Instagram video. And I think that that's probably true because over last weekend, I took a video when I was on vacation. And it was sort of, you know, I did this sort of pan up from a ceiling down to a floor. I remember looking at it afterwards saying, I mean, that's incredibly smooth because I didn't even really try that hard. And it seems better than the stabilization was when Instagram video first launched. So this may be something that Luma has already been incorporated into Instagram. But it really just kind of makes Instagram and Vine, because those two get compared to each other so much, even that much farther away from each other. Randall, I sort of see Instagram almost as becoming like a little personal editing project, where Vine is a lot more of this sort of short, staccato creative medium.
Yeah, and that's great for everyone, I think. I think the fact that these products continue to diverge, at least in user base, if not features, is really good. I mean, you look at Facebook and Twitter. Facebook did not invent the newsfeed. Twitter did, right? And then Facebook sort of built a news feed for what Facebook is. And having sort of two video services, one that focuses on making it shiny and pretty and interesting and allowing you to upload previously shot videos and you know, just trying to create like what their take is on like this fast video thing versus Vine, which is all about like trucks going off of overpasses and like that was the last Vine video I saw. Or you know, just crazy 6-second clips. I've seen a lot of comedians use it as like a different kind of medium. That's a good thing for us. I mean, that's a great thing for us. And this, you know, I guess this kind of sets the tone for Instagram's acquisition strategy. They don't really have a huge reason to go out and acquire. They're not hunting for engineers like Facebook does. And Facebook will acquire like a ton of YCs, Y Combinator startups, just to kind of fold them in and have them build other products. Instagram, on the other hand, building their first acquisition being a technology acquisition, that's like a really good sign. I mean, that's a healthy thing for startups in Silicon Valley, but also like Instagram benefits hugely. This color grading thing that we were playing earlier, I love that. I think it's such a, you know, to give regular folks the idea of color grading, to treat a shot differently and to get a different mood. I mean, that's a great new take on, you know, on like mobile video and making it easy for you to make something cool looking. I'm a huge fan of this, and I think it splits the services a little bit more, which is really a good thing.
This seems to be a new trend, right? Things like Splice, Mixit are all saying, let's do more than just take some video and put a clip up. I mean, even Vine, it has a in-camera cuts-only editing feature, but it's still sort of an editing feature. I would expect Vine won't get more complicated than that, because that's sort of the Twitter ethos, right? Which is, let's limit you to see how creative you are within the limits. But I fully expect to see more apps like what Instagram is doing, like what Splice does, like what Mixit does, to say, okay, now we're going to give you a little in-app editing. And I don't know, maybe iMovie coming to iOS sparked some ideas out there with people realized, hey, I actually can do some decent editing on these mobile devices.
Yeah, we've seen technology sort of, you know, there's that technology curve where the technology gets invented, it's overhyped, and then it comes down, and then there's like this slow rise back to utility. I think we're sort of reaching there, right? When Viddy and Social Cam were huge, that was like a big deal for a couple months last year or 2 years ago or whatever. That was sort of the overhype phase where it's like, oh, video on mobile, this is the coolest thing ever. But those apps were more or less just like, they didn't have any limitations or recommendations. They didn't have any real opinion. They were relying on their users to come up with like the best way to use it. Whereas these other apps, they're sort of a different category. They have a strong opinion about how you use them. And I think that they're a little bit, they're guiding the user in a way that makes a little bit more sense. Like you say with iMovie, sort of introducing the concept that like, you know, phones and laptops or phones and tablets rather are useful and real, like, things you can use. I think these guys are perfecting it a little. And I'm really excited to see the future, though. I think, you know, especially if Instagram is going to find other small companies like this and acquire them and fold it into Instagram Video, they definitely have the resources. With Facebook being public, you know, they can just, you know, basically mint dollars by issuing new stock. So, you know, hopefully we see more innovation based on this acquisition by a startup saying, any of the Instagram will acquire me. So I'm going to try that idea I've always had.
Wired's got an interesting article today. If you're trying to protect yourself from spying eyes, email is one of the most vulnerable things that you do on the internet. PGP is out there, but sometimes it's more difficult to implement than people would like. People don't want to mess with it. Bjarni Runar Einarsson, a former Google employee and a software developer, a member of the Icelandic Pirate Party, as a matter of fact, has teamed up with Smari McCarthy, also from Iceland, and Brennan Novak, a Portland UI designer, to work on something called MailPile. It's an open source web-based PGP easy client that you can either run in the cloud or run locally and still get the benefits of a Gmail. So things like search, things like archiving. They've raised $116,556 over their $100,000 goal. I mean, the $16,000 over the goal on Indiegogo, and they still have 16 days left. So this is obviously something people want to use. You can tinker with it yourself. It's an open API. It's trying to make PGP as easy as sending a friend request. So instead of having to go through this laborious key exchange, because frankly, if the person on the other end isn't using secure email, your email is no longer secure once they read it, once they open it. However, it's not perfect. PGP can't protect a log of who you sent email or received from being collected. But with services like this, we heard about MyCoLab as something that people are starting to use. Have the leaks done more to secure email, Randall? Is that one upside here?
I mean, for sure. The thing it's really done is at least put on people's radar that, you know, email is inherently insecure. There's all these hops in the middle, plain text. Like, you can see it while it's passing over. For people who are really concerned, this gives them, you know, a tool that lets them do it. Hopefully, I don't know the crypto background of these guys, so I can't, you know, speak to how good the crypto is if they're using off-the-shelf stuff, which is probably the good tactic versus inventing their own. But assuming that their crypto is solid and people are auditing them, and whatever, you know, Decent, you know, they have the LavaBit. That was the service that Snowden was using, right? So that to have a centralized service that has to shut down, that's obviously a problem. And having a, you know, there's other services like CryptoCat that are not quite as secure as advertised. That's a problem. But making PGP simple to use, I mean, that to me solves the inherent issue of like making it so that crypto is not so hard. Crypto is not as complex as it seemingly has to be, right? They can make it simple, easy to use. That'll help at least dissidents around the world shield their communication from prying eyes. And, you know, I hope that this, I'm always really skeptical of Indiegogo campaigns, to be honest. Like, I just don't Kickstarter, like crowdfunding things. I don't buy a lot of them because I just don't, I'm not a big believer ahead of time. But after the fact, you know, if this works and people are, it's solid and people are using it, like, you know, a lot of people like me that are skeptical would get on board and really make it critical mass or something. So hopefully it does what it says.
I think probably the leaks helped something like this get to critical mass a lot quicker. Not that it's not a good service already, but it's just really good timing to introduce something that's like, okay, well, here's an alternative for people who are not comfortable with the problems with email, as you laid out, Randall, a couple minutes ago, that the options that we have now, it's a very good time to say, well, how about this Indiegogo? Would you like to contribute to our campaign? And obviously, they were able to reach their goal and then some, with quite a bit of time left. So I know what you mean about sometimes these campaigns seem like a really great idea, but it's all about the execution, and you don't have to execute when you put something like this together. You really just need the concept, but it is a good first start.
Here's hoping they make PGP as pervasive and easy to use as Facebook, because if you can get people everywhere to use Facebook, if you could do the same thing for encryption on email, that'd be amazing. Check it out, mailpile.is, if you want more information. Let's move on to the randomizer. We conducted a straw poll of our live audience today. Number two story for the randomizer was robots search for sunken World War II aircraft. Tight vote today, 46% for that one. But the winner is Health from Above, a drone to deliver defibrillators to heart attack victims, getting 54% of the vote. This is using quadcopters, it looks like, or something similar, to within a 10-kilometer radius deliver a defibrillator. It's called Deficopter. Maybe need to work on that name.
Yeah.
From an app. So you have to have the app installed, and you have to be with the person who needs it, most likely. Although I guess you could do it yourself. And then you request it, and the copter will bring a defibrillator to you wherever you are, at 70 kilometers an hour. So less than 10 minutes, it would get to you. The thing is, in Germany, where this is being tested, it would actually need to have a monitor. So this may end up being kind of pricey, because it's $26,000 already for the hardware. Plus, you got to employ somebody to keep an eye on it to comply with German law.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great, though? Like, that's the future. You know, UPS replaced by drones, heart defibrillators, firefighters, all that stuff. That just seems so cool to me.
And Lunchman in the chat room is like, what if you're inside? I think they're trying to solve the outside problem. Inside, you're more likely to have access to a defibrillator. Most public places do have them now. If you look around, you will see them on the walls. They're nearby. If you're outside, though, that's where it becomes a problem. Dr. Mom says you need it within 1 minute, not 10 minutes.
That's the thing is, I do not want to be like, this sucks, because the technology does not suck, but it seems unlikely to be helpful on a regular basis because it just isn't going to happen soon enough.
Maybe it's different in Germany. Like, maybe they have, the image they use on the golf course. Are there lots of golf courses in Germany where, you know, people are frequently having heart attacks? Is that like the key market? I mean, obviously there's market research to do. The tech seems really cool and it could be a good idea, but I have no idea. Like you said, Sarah, like, is this really a problem?
It may be too costly, but you know, and it takes less than 10 minutes to get there. It could be within a minute, depending on where you are. And granted, maybe it won't save a life, but if it saves a couple lives, I think it's worth investigating. It's an interesting idea. Maybe not quite practical enough yet.
How long does it take to get a firefighter there or like an ambulance? Good. I mean, is that 10 minutes?
Like, that's going to the same.
Can fly over the man-made waterway at the golf course, whereas a person could not.
The sand traps.
So there you go.
Don't want to get anyone in the sand trap. That would be the worst.
I'd rather have a defibrillator flying toward me than nothing at all, exactly. I have to say. Let's see what's on the calendar. Sarah, why don't you take a look?
Okay. Registration for Samsung's own DevCon is now open. If you'd like to participate, head on over. And also, new Yahoo usernames are starting to get sent out today. I know that I applied for Sarah Lane at Yahoo because I never had that before. Maybe you'll get what you asked for as well, if you already asked for it.
I don't know if this... I didn't get anything personally.
No, I haven't seen anything.
I don't know if this belongs in the calendar, but Feedly opened up their paid service. And I know a lot of people use RSS readers out there, so that might be interesting too. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a call from a listener in Illinois who thinks that having wireless phone charging in your car, we talked about that last week, could actually make you safer. Thought I heard.
Hey, Tom and gang. Love the show and everything. And I just was listening to the Thursday episode about the GM power mat thing that they may put in the cars. And I think one of the things that immediately came to my mind was safety and security. You know, people have been talking a lot about, you know, how to get the your phones out of people's hands while they're driving and safety and everything like that. And if there's a power mat someplace where, you know, you get in the car, you put your phone, it's all secure, it's charging and everything, maybe hooked up to Bluetooth or whatever through your car stereo, but it's out of your way, but it's charging, people are going to be more apt to actually put it there because they want to charge their phone and less apt to actually grab it and distract them while they're driving. Just a thought, and see you later. Bye.
So, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I
can see it having an effect and a measurable effect, but I don't know how much of an effect.
Right, right. Also on the same subject, George wrote in and he said, when you were talking about the power mat and new GM cars, Tom suggested creating a power mat in your coffee cup holder. I don't actually think that's a bad idea. If you're not trying to power your cellular device, then you can use that power to keep your coffee hot. If you could control the power or wattage of the power mat, you could potentially control the temperature of your coffee. Of course, if you want to get really wacky, you could put the power mat in the seat and use it as a seat warmer or as a charger.
You have to sit on your phone, though.
Hot coffee in cars? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
The whole thing sounds like electrocution waiting to happen, and we're going to need defibrillators.
Exactly.
Well, that makes me think of espresso, which makes me think of Vidpresso, which makes me think of Randall Bennett, who I'm already thinking of because he's been on the show the whole time. But Randall, thank you for joining us today. What's going on at Vidpresso? What are you guys up to these days?
Yeah, so we've had a really busy summer. Vidpresso is a way to take Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, put it on TV. We're working on some stuff for events. So if you're an event person, have like a conference or whatever, reach out to us. We're looking for beta testers for that. We also have Facebook picture support like last week, and we're working on some other secret projects, launching on some TV shows that you're probably going to watch. So that's pretty cool. Also, we're on Twit Know How, so watch that.
Yeah, definitely watch Know How if you want an example of how it works. Ayaz uses it to great effect there, so check it out. Well, thank you all for joining us. You can be a part of the show in many ways by calling us, by emailing us, by voting in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. Our subreddit is where we actually monitor what kind of stories you guys are interested in. It helps us put together the lineup each and every day. So get in there and vote. Join the 17,000-some people that are subscribed to technewstoday.reddit.com. Those other ways, our email address is... TNT at twit.tv. You can give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. And, of course, our website, which has all this stuff collected, twit.tv/TNT. Ayaz will be back tomorrow, along with our guest, Callie Lewis from Geek Beat TV. I'll see you then.